702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DStv channel 856.
23 minutes to go before we get to 7 o'clock. Yeah, I know that catch up on sports. Maybe something to throw out there is what do you think of South African rugby teams participating in this URC tournament, where we get to play against European teams. I think it's a good thing. This is how guys get to see how the rest of the world plays, and we're not just stuck with our own brand of play. And I'm surprised. I mean, the Lions did well, and everyone else, Stormers, Bulls, and the Works, all of them are taking a pummeling at the moment. It's pretty tough out there. But anyway, just if you have any thoughts, you can pop us a WhatsApp on that. But up next, a conversation that I'm really looking forward to, and that is, of course, with Tim Neary in our Nature Diary. Tim Neary is a CSI and nature conservationist, and we'll be catching up also with a marine biologist, Professor Peter Tesk from the University of Johannesburg. And we're going to talk about, I guess, something that is quite well known for many people who've been down to the coast or live near the coast, and that is, of course, the sardine run. It's part and parcel, I guess, of South African culture, so to speak. Good morning to you, Tim. It's been a minute.
It has been. Are you well this morning? Are you looking outside and are you enjoying the sort of warmth that we've got at the moment?
I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. I'm more of a summer person myself. So with the sun coming out and things warming up, and you know, by now I'm wearing a t-shirt, so I'm over the moon, to be honest
absolutely.
With you.
Absolutely. I love the fact that we've now got the early morning, but then you watch the different characters as well in your gardens. It always fascinates me this time of the year because of our friendly thrushes, which are always in the leaves and on the ground. When you go out for your early morning walk and it's that dawn chorus, they're sitting in the trees. It always fascinates me. I've often wondered, why the conversation in the tree and not the conversation on the ground. But once they're on the ground, they're very busy, which is always good. Yeah, awesome. I think the coast is a fascination and the sea is a fascination, coming from there, of course. And we never really, where I lived in Port Elizabeth, we never had the sardine run. Because obviously it went from sort of, I think, kind of south of us all the way up the coast. But I've seen some of the most incredible photography and videography from Gordon Hiles, a mate of mine. And he has shot these huge bait balls of the sardines as the sharks or the brooders whale, etc., go into these bait balls. Oh. And I was wondering, why on earth do they do this? And I've often wondered about this. What is the movement? Why is there this great migration? Not unlike, I guess, the wildebeest of the Serengeti, the brown-veined white butterflies, which you will be getting a little later in the year as they also go across the landscape. So it's kind of, it's a migration, but why? What moves them all the way where they go to?
So I take it that Professor Peter Tesk will be able to assist us with that, marine biologist at UJ, at University of Johannesburg. Let's just say good morning to him. Good morning, Prof, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Just good morning. Nice to be here.
Great stuff.
Peter, good morning to you. Could I be right in saying that that it is a great migration, not unlike the wildebeest, etc., with the difference that they're not going back again?
Yes, we don't know exactly if they're going back or not, but it is definitely one of the greatest animal migrations on the planet. And in terms of spectacle, in terms of the number of predators that get attracted by the sardines, it is really very similar to what the wildebeest are doing. Except the wildebeest migration is very well understood, and the sardine migration is not.
Uh-huh.
Whereabouts does the sardine migration effect start? Is it fairly far south of where, of Durban?
I would say it is on the southeast coast, or perhaps the southern east, the eastern south coast of South Africa, and it is essentially triggered by upwelling in that region. So sardines accumulate there; they migrate in numbers to the southeast coast when upwelling occurs, and then after a while they start moving up the east coast.
The upwelling, can you explain that to us?
It's essentially when cold water moves up from the deep. And the reason why the sardines get attracted to that hasn't really been understood for a long time. And this is essentially where our research now comes in. It makes perfect sense if you consider where these sardines are originally coming from. And their origin has essentially surprised everyone. because we essentially thought this must be some kind of genetically distinct East Coast population that goes up to the East Coast for spawning and then returns to the South Coast. Our finding is that they're actually originally from the West. So most likely, many of them are originating from the West Coast of South Africa, where water temperatures are generally quite a bit colder.
But that's a huge distance in that they're traveling. And, I mean, it must be kind of a dangerous journey when you food for predators and you're moving all the way from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Yeah, essentially, there's a lot of movement going back and forth between the South Coast and the West Coast. So you have a lot of eggs and larvae from the South Coast moving towards the West Coast, and perhaps later they come back. And a bit of movement from West Coast to South Coast. So initially, these are fairly small groups that are moving back and forth there. And what then happens is that these West Coast sardines are constantly looking for upwelling. And essentially, they don't like it very much on the South Coast, which is warm temperate habitat. And they're trying essentially to move to areas that have upwelling, essentially that are like their preferred West Coast habitat. And this is how they're ending up essentially on the wrong side of the country.
Peter, how on earth do you undertake research like this, though? Because, you know, it's great when you look at the wildebeest. You can sit on your top of your vehicle with your binoculars and say, I'm happy about that. But the sardines, I'm imagining you can't put tracking or devices on them. Or can you? You know, it must be a huge undertaking to do this research.
Well, studying the sardine run is extremely difficult because much of it actually happens at greater depths where we cannot really see what's going on. So what we essentially did was we did genomic research. We sampled sardines from all over the country, including three sardine runs, and we generated genetic marker data from all over the genome just to see how are they related to each other. And we essentially found that the sardines in South Africa can be divided into two major populations or stock components. There's a West Coast population and a South Coast population. And then all you have to do is essentially get an idea, the ones that are participating in the sardine run, to which population do they belong? The surprise was that they belong to the West Coast population.
With this run as such, though, is it only seen on the South Coast, or do we actually, are there other runs that we're just not aware of?
It's quite possible that there's a lot more going on in deeper water where the predators really cannot see the sardines so easily or get to them so easily. So it is quite possible that there's quite a bit more than meets the eye. So we're only seeing what's happening at the surface. And this is also one reason why we don't really know what happens to the sardine in the long run. It's quite possible that a large number of them get killed in the process by the predators, or the water temperature simply becomes too warm for them. And you must remember, these are West Coast sardines. They don't do terribly well in the subtropical waters of KwaZulu-Natal. So it is possible that eventually some of them make it back to the South Coast. Some of them may eventually even get back home to the West Coast, but we don't know exactly what their fate is.
Yeah, I'm assuming that to have a true sort of migration, it would require the return. The spawning, though, of the sardines, if there is no return, is there a certain population that remains static in the breeding areas?
Well, we know that they stay in the area till summer. There are always sardine eggs in the water. But this is not really a migration that makes a lot of sense, in our opinion. These sardines are simply in the wrong place. When there's a bit of upwelling, they will spawn because that's the kind of water temperature they like. But in general, if they had stayed on the West Coast, they would probably do much better.
Is this a worldwide phenomenon as well? When I see that you were studying it in conjunction with the Australians, do they have anything similar in Australia?
They do have the same species, but as far as I know, they have no migration of that sort. So this is really quite unique to South Africa.
And the sardines themselves, under threat at all, or are they doing pretty well and providing sufficient foodstuffs? And I'm assuming that it's also a fairly large commercial industry.
Yeah, absolutely. The sardine run itself only makes up a relatively small fraction of the overall population size of sardines in South Africa. At the moment, the main fishery is on the South Coast. And the interesting thing is that as a byproduct of our study, we can now explain what happened to the Saudians on the West Coast, because that stock has essentially collapsed in the past. And essentially, when most of the fishing happens on the West Coast, and the fishing industry assumes that these sardines will eventually get replaced from the South Coast, that is very unlikely, because each group tends to be adapted to a certain water temperature. So there is a fair amount of movement going on between the two coastlines, but we are still dealing with different stock components that need to be managed separately. So at the moment, the West Coast sardines probably require protection. The South Coast sardines, not so much.
From a tourist industry, I'm assuming that this also has a huge component to it.
Absolutely. The sardine run is obviously important during winter to attract tourists to KZN. In the rest of the country, the sardines are obviously not so important for tourism, but for food security primarily.
Peter, you mentioned the fact of the predators in the sardines. Can you give us some idea of the different types of predators that we would be seeing with the sardine run?
Well, this can attract a lot of different species. So there would be predatory lionfish, there would be seals, a lot of dolphins. I read somewhere that 18,000 dolphins, common dolphins, are actually involved in this. And they're primarily responsible for making the bait balls you discussed earlier. There's sharks, and every now and again, a large baleen whale shows up and swallows a bait ball. So this attracts a very wide variety of predators. And in that way, it is also very similar to the Olybius migrations in East Africa.
You mentioned food security there. This sort of research, does this contribute greatly to food security for the future?
I believe that studying in commercially important fish populations with these new genomic methods is a very good way to go about identifying regional genetic structure. And doing this, we can actually get an idea. Are there stocks that are overexploited where we really have to put a stop to commercial exploitation? Essentially, it is quite informative for that. And we were quite surprised that we did find something at all with these sardines, because they're moving around so much. So in species that don't disperse so much, you find much higher levels of genetic structure. So essentially, combining this genomic work with fishery science has a lot of potential to improve the management of fish resources in South Africa.
Something that did fascinate me before our talk, I thought yesterday afternoon I would pop into my local grocery store and have a look at the sardines on the shelves. I couldn't find any sardines that were tinned locally. They all seem to be imported. Are these our own sardines that we send offshore and bring back again afterwards?
I honestly have no idea what exactly ends up where. In this case, I'm a geneticist sitting in the lab most of the time.
Right.
But I am assuming that our local sardines get consumed somewhere.
If you don't mind, Prof, I mean, what does this tell us about, in terms of the sardine run? Does it tell us anything about global climate change, especially considering that the oceans are probably the one part of the global ecosystem that feels climate change, the hardest and the most?
Yeah, this is a very important point. Essentially, now that we know that the sardine run participants need colder water because they are adapted to West Coast conditions, we may run into a problem if temperatures continue to increase on the East Coast. It's still possible that sardine runs will start, so the upwelling depends on winds and gyres and so on, and it happens at greater depths. But once they start moving up the coast and the water temperature is too high for them, it's possible that essentially they run out of energy very quickly, and it's possible that the swarms will disintegrate or get consumed, or the sardines will simply die because the water is too hot before they ever reach KwaZulu-Natal.
Yeah, I find this whole sort of the warming of the oceans particularly interesting as well, because I guess people are thinking, well, the ocean's going to warm 3 or 5 degrees, and it's really it's that half degree the change that seems to make a huge difference. And I guess that's because it's over the long term. Is that fairly accurate?
Yes, and you also need to remember that ectotherms cannot really adjust easily to a change in temperature. I mean, if it's too hot for us, we just take a coat off or something. But the sardines, to them, 1 degree makes a huge difference. They need to be physiologically adapted to these conditions. So even though the West Coast and the South Coast are not very different most of the time, the slight difference in water temperature make a big difference to the sardine stock structure.
Are we seeing a decrease in the runs, though, on, you know, sort of up to that south coast based on the increases we have at the moment?
To the best of my knowledge, the sardine run in 2021 was actually quite good. So as far as I can tell, we're not seeing anything like that yet.
Yeah, I was also fascinated. One of the comments that you made in your article was that this has been going around since the Earth was covered around in glaciers. So not a new phenomenon at all. This is sort of something really imprinted in the old sardine.
No, I have to actually say that is the opposite of what we found. It happens sometimes that media releases get spiced up a bit by media people.
Oh, yes.
So essentially, no, this is definitely not what the sardines are doing. This essentially goes back to the idea that there is an East Coast population. It's been moving up there since the Ice Age, when that would have been colder water up there, and they just keep doing it. But essentially, this would only make sense if there is a distinct East Coast population. And as you see, what we found is that these are West Coast sardines. It is so possible that they've been doing this for a very long time, but we really don't know for how long.
Peter, studying the oceans, this is something obviously you as a marine biologist have been doing for a hell of a long time. Is it a challenge, and is there a lot more that we need to learn? Have we just really scratched the surface, so to speak?
Yes, I believe we have. I mean, genomic methods are now becoming more and more popular around the world. In South Africa, we've only just started with this. And I think there's huge potential to find overlooked population structure. When you're looking at species, individuals from a larger population that all look pretty much the same, genetically, they may be very, very different. So with new technology, we are finding a lot of new things now.
Sure, you know, I think one of the things that always concerns me with the ocean is that I grew up in a little village in Port Elizabeth, Skoonmakers Kop, and we would go down and catch what we call tanfish. And you caught just enough for supper, because if you got anything more than what you needed, you got a thick ear from your dad, and you understood the oceans or that it was a plentiful area. You know, 45 years later, you can go back to that same area. You can't catch a fish. And I think that we look at our landscapes and we realize how quickly things degrade on the landscapes. And we get all excited about wetlands and treed areas, etc.
Yeah.
But the oceans, we just don't know. And we don't seem to understand the effect that the oceans have on us. And the reliance that we have on the oceans, from our oxygen supply to our food security. And I think that's one of the things that always concerns me, is that degrading of the ocean is taking place at a huge pace as far as I'm concerned. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's something that concerns me. And, you know, when I listen to things like this and I look at one of the strap lines coming out of this article, is that we could see, just with global warming or accelerated climate change, as I like to call it, we could see the end of something like the sardine run in our lifetime. And that's a concerning point.
Exactly, and I was actually going to ask, Prof, I mean, do we see any changes or any significant changes from, say, I don't know, recent sardine runs, say, going back a decade or two, to what we're seeing now? Are there any significant changes that tells us that something is going wrong?
Well, at this point, this would essentially imply that sardine runs become less and less common. I'm not entirely sure about that. You know, that's sort of difficult to say.
Mm.
But I am sort of aware that in the past, tropical fish would arrive on the south coast in numbers during summer and then disappear again in winter. And now they tend to stay throughout winter as well. So things are changing at a quite a fast pace here, especially on the south coast compared to what happened previously.
Well, Vishal, my comment remains. We talk about saving the planet. It's got nothing to do about saving the planet. The planet can save itself quite well without us. It's more about how the hell man manages to live for the next 1,000 years in some form of unison with the planet. That's going to be the big challenge.
You know, I totally agree with you on that one. Unfortunately, you know, this planet doesn't need us. It got along for at least 4 billion years without us. We've only been around for the last 200,000 years, so it really doesn't need us. And it keeps on recovering, no matter what major event occurs, you know, and I think including events that we cause and create, it will be wiped out and it will recover eventually. But yeah, no, I mean, it's an absolute fascinating thing. And I think it's something that we take for granted because, you know, both to you, Tim, and the prof, I think it's one of those perennial things that we like doing, going down to, you know, the KwaZulu-Natal. You know, trying to sort of time it properly for the sardine run. We see people on the beaches, children on the beaches trying to grab up as many sardines as possible, and people do what they do with it, a little braai, a little, you know, preparing it and eating it, some selling it, etc. But at the end of the day, you know, it holds far greater significance than sort of an annual South African tradition just for fun. And I was actually quite flummoxed by the idea that we don't quite know why these sardines are doing this. That, you know, they take off from the west, come to the east, and that's about almost as much as we know about it.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. And Peter, thank you very much for joining us with us and just giving us a small insight. And maybe the next time that people are getting all excited, and they do, they listen to people from, you know, okay, right, they're now at Port Edward, let's have a look, see when they get into the next point. There's a great amount of excitement, but it's the understanding, I think, a little bit more about the background to it that makes makes it a little more interesting for us.
Yeah, then you can spare a thought for the poor sardines who have traveled all the way from the West Coast to get there.
Yeah, and we think of turtles. Of 1% of turtle surviving. Goodness me, I don't know how, as a little sardine, you get past all those predators on the way up your coastal trip.
Yeah. Right. And for me, the best part is we still don't quite know 100% what they're doing it for. We know that they wait for the upswell, and then after that, guys, what are you doing, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they're looking for better weather, who knows, or better conditions in the water. But, Prof, thank you so much. All the best to you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. I mean, you know, just to wrap up there very quickly, Tim, I mean, a fascinating thing, something that we take for granted. We see it obviously on our coastlines and we run around to gather up as many sardines as we possibly can, but we don't necessarily get the point of it all, eh?
We don't. And I think that covers nature throughout our gardens, throughout wherever we go. We look at that butterfly that I'm looking at the moment that's out warming its wings. Why is it doing it? Where's it come from? What's it doing in my garden? You know, and the more we understand about nature, the more I think the more we enjoy it as well. What we don't understand, we always fear.
Tim, always great chatting to you. All the best to you, mate, and thank you for giving us your time again this morning on a fascinating topic.